Thank you to Babbel and Surfshark for sponsoring this episode. What came next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. As mentioned in part one of Danielle Lycum's story, Danielle is a mother, nurse, author, survivor, speaker, and victim advocate from Minnesota. In November of 2018, her entire life changed forever after being the victim of a home invasion and sexual assault. The journey to find and convict her rapist was long and arduous, but Danielle leaned on the community and professionals around her to prevail. She continues to share all that comes next in her journey and fight for justice in hopes of bringing awareness and inspiring other survivors.
What ended up happening is the man that raped me sexually assaulted a vulnerable adult. That man reported the sexual assault, got a rape kit done, and his rape kit results matched my rape kit results. Before he was arrested, I had told my ex-husband, "What if it's this guy?" My ex-husband said, "No, it wouldn't be him. He's from 3.5 hours away. He's not going to drive all the way down here and rape you." When we told my ex-husband that it was him, he said, "I should have listened to you." His jaw clenched, his fist clenched, and I could see the rage on his face. The person that raped me was somebody that I had known for about 8 years at the time. He was a groomsman in my wedding. When he got arrested, he and his wife had just found out that she was pregnant with their third child, which would be child number 6 for him. When I found out who it was that raped me, I was even more afraid than when I didn't know who it was. I know all of these horrible things about this person, and even more that I talk about in my memoir, in my sequel memoir. So I was more afraid knowing he was 20 miles down the road in jail at the time. When law enforcement told me, it was a relief, but also I quickly learned that the legal battle wasn't me versus the rapist. It was the state of Minnesota versus him. I had an amazing prosecutor. They respected my opinion. They wanted to hear what I had to say. They wanted to know how I felt about it. But it wasn't really my fight to fight. It was the state of Minnesota versus him. I was kind of along for the ride, but I have goosebumps thinking about this because I have worked with such amazing people. I worked with 3 investigators from Winona County that did such a great job. They were so trauma-informed. One of them is a sexual assault investigator. Another one was a narcotics investigator, and I can't remember what the third one was. But they were very patient and kind. It wasn't their job to inform me of everything, and it wasn't their job to make sure I was taken care of, but they did anyways. When I had a question, they answered it, or they referred me to who could answer it. They were just really amazing people. And I want to say a shout out to them because they didn't look at me like I was work for them. They looked at me like I was a victim. They believed me, and I appreciate that so much. From the very beginning, the victim services coordinator, she was probably my number one victim advocate. And I had some victim advocates from Winona, but unfortunately, there was a lot of turnover in their jobs. So I would get a new one. I didn't even know who it was most of the time, but The lady that worked at the courthouse walked me through everything regarding the court hearings and the court process. She was so good and so consistent. But the legal battle took a really long time. COVID delayed a lot of things, and it changed the in-person hearings to Zoom hearings. I had started a support group around this time. One of the ladies in support group said, I try to go to every hearing that I can because then it desensitizes me for when I'm going to need to read my victim impact statement to the man that raped me. So I learned in the support group that, plus all these other tactics to how to get through, I went to every court hearing that I could just to desensitize myself to seeing the man that raped me. I didn't have consistent support because I later learned what a secondary victim was. My mom was a secondary victim, and she was going through the grieving process. She was in the anger phase when I was in the anger phase, and we were clashing. Never in my life have I not gotten along with my mom until the man that raped me was arrested. I went about a month that I didn't talk to my mom or dad because we were clashing so bad. In hindsight, I wish I knew what secondary victims were. I wish I knew that my mom was grieving too, because I feel like I would have had a little bit more empathy for the fact that she needed to grieve as well. My sister was in the National Guard and she was over in Kuwait, so she wasn't able to come with me. I had a best friend named Jake at the time, and he went with me to court hearings when he could. I think as a victim with a 2.5 year court process, I needed consistency with people. It was the investigators, the prosecutor, and the victim services coordinator were the only people that were consistent throughout the whole court process for me. I didn't have my parents. I didn't have my ex-husband. I didn't have my best friend all the time. My sister was across the world. So the only people that I had consistently were those people. So I'm very appreciative of them.
And that's another reality, is that those loved ones love you deeply, but they are not experts in this field that know how to show up for victims.
Yeah. One of the court hearings was delayed because the rapist found an error on a search warrant. He's so narcissistic and he thinks he knows everything. So he got all the paperwork, and sure enough, he found that the license plate on a truck that the police officers searched was wrong. And what happened was, since the license plate was wrong on the search warrant, all the evidence they found in his truck would have been thrown out for court. So that delayed the court hearing. It probably made for another court hearing. I remember one of the court hearings was like part A, part B, part C, because they took so long. There was a lot of evidence that was in question. Like, could this be used in a jury trial, or is it going to be thrown out in a jury trial? Even his interview, because he was claiming that he didn't get access to a lawyer, which wasn't true. His DNA came up on my rape kit, but even that was in question because he didn't give consent for them to take his DNA for my case. They only gave consent for them to take DNA for the other case. There were so many questions that a plea deal was really the only logical option from the prosecutor's standpoint. And as a victim, I was like, he gets the easy way out. It just didn't seem fair. But after going through with the plea deal, I got to hear him say, I'm guilty. Yes, I raped her at gunpoint with her hands zip tied behind her back. Yes, her son was in the house. It was really satisfying for me to hear him say that he was guilty. He was charged for breaking into my house the night before. He was charged for breaking into my house and raping me at gunpoint. When it came time for the sentencing hearing, I requested that it be in person because all other court hearings were via Zoom. I wanted him to hear my voice in person. I wanted him to feel my presence. It was granted. I remember the victim services coordinator and the prosecutor told me my case and George Floyd's case were two of the very few that were approved to be in person at that time in the state of Minnesota. So that was really healing for me, reading my victim impact statement to him in person.
Thank you to Babbel for sponsoring this episode. It is never too late to learn a new language, especially with the help of Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. I was super excited to try Babbel and begin learning Italian as fast as I could. When I started Babbel, though, I only knew one swear word, and that was about it. But within about 2 weeks and the first 8 lessons, I felt surprisingly confident in my knowledge of the Italian language. So much so that I'm contemplating booking us that dream Italian trip the kids and I always talk about. That's because not only does Babbel teach you, they also immerse you in learning with their speech recognition technology that helps you with your pronunciation and your accent. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for listeners, at babbel.com/WCN. Again, that's 55% off at babbel.com/WCN, spelled BABBEL.com/WCN. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I have my victim impact statement here. On the night of November 17th, 2018, I sat down on the couch after cleaning up remnants of the day and curled up with a glass of Pinot Noir. It was an awesome day. My son and I had gone to the Grinch in the theater, bought Christmas lights for the tree, and listened to Christmas music on the way home. He knew that when the clock showed the 7 o'clock hour, we would watch one episode of Paw Patrol before bed. And after we did, I tucked him in with my pink book light clipped to the side of his bed, his Paw Patrol nightlight shining colorful paws on the ceiling, a touch nightlight, his glowing iguana named Sheldon, and his soft yellow blankie. After his bedtime routine, I finally got to relax. I looked at the lock on the front door to make sure the deadbolt was turning the correct way, indicating it was locked. It was. I checked to make sure the garage car door was closed and the lights were off. They were. I checked to make sure the patio door was locked. It was. I snuggled on the couch with the cats on my lap and scrolled through my phone. I texted my usual friends and sipped my one glass of wine next to my glowing Christmas tree. Shortly thereafter, I went to bed feeling safe and whole. I was happy. As a fellow survivor once described, I was happy while somebody was waiting to hurt me. At 1:27 a.m., a gun was pointed at my head and I was being yelled at to not move. Before I knew it, I was lying on my stomach with my wrists zip-tied together behind my back so tight that I could hardly register the pain over the fear that I felt. Over the course of the next 5 hours, I was raped 3 times, had my life threatened, had my son's life threatened, all while uncontrollably shaking and crying, in fear, after being held hostage in what used to be the comfort of my own home. How do I describe shaking hysterically for 5 hours, wondering when it would end and if I would be alive to see the sunrise? How do I explain how it felt to be held down, tied up, and raped? I couldn't scream. I couldn't run. I couldn't hide. I couldn't go anywhere. I had to stay there for my son. I had to stay quiet for my son. How do I explain what it felt like to have my 3-year-old child's life threatened while I was tied up and could physically do nothing about it? How do I explain what it was like to have my child, the one person I would give my life for without hesitation, ask why a man hurt his mommy? Afterward, I had to put on one of the biggest acts of my life when my son looked at the marks on my wrists from the zip ties and asked why. How do I describe what it was like to lose my home, my town, my safety, and my security? My life was completely uprooted, and I lost the happiness and light I once had in my soul. I slipped a few important things into my purse, threw on my coat, and took one last look around, knowing it might be the last time I'd ever set foot in that house again. How do I describe how it felt to look at every single man I passed for the next 3.5 months, wondering if he was the man who raped me? Wondering if he was the man looking to kill me. I didn't want to step outside for fear that somebody was watching, listening, waiting, just as the man, whom I now know, I had to cart my child around in between homes with our belongings packed in a garbage bag and a laundry basket. I had to take $760 worth of HIV prophylaxis medications that could have caused kidney failure, liver issues, and death. I had to take a morning after pill just in case the unknown masked rapist impregnated me. How do I explain what it felt like to have my entire life gone through by a group of people I didn't even know? My house was on display. It was a crime scene. I cried out all of my tears, so much that when my heart wanted to cry more, nothing would even come out. I had to sit my son down and explain to him that even though we couldn't be at our home in St. Charles for Christmas, Santa would still find us. I'd like to ask if the man that raped me could even fathom how any of this would feel, or how he'd react if that happened to his wife or one of his two daughters, or to himself. I bet he couldn't imagine it. I bet he also couldn't imagine that I am a survivor, and I am far stronger than he thought I was. He broke into the home of a warrior. Thanks to him, I lost a promotion, my house, my car, and my trust in humanity. What was he thinking when he loaded the clip in his gun that night, the one he held to my head? Did he think at all about his beautiful wife and children? Did he think about how he was in my wedding? Did he honestly think I'd be able to make snow angels with my son in the morning as though nothing had happened? Your Honor, I was a school nurse for 3 years. After switching my career to the Mayo Clinic, I was promoted to one of the four charge nurses after 6 months. Less than 18 months later, against the normal standards of Mayo Clinic nursing, the department created a position making me the permanent full-time charge nurse. I am prompt, efficient, ethical, organized. I am strongly supported within my department. I now lack any motivation to continue education in nursing. Instead, I fight with feeling broken, used, abused, damaged, and unworthy. I spend a lot of time in a state of rage that takes so much energy just to tame it enough to get through the day. I put so much time, money, and effort into making sure my son and I could feel safe, but none of that brings back the sense of safety I once had. I will never be who I used to be. But what I do know is that I've always been strong enough and smart enough to protect my son. Like a lioness, I will always protect my cub. I didn't deserve this, nor did my son. My son is now obsessed with bad guys. It's a constant reminder that he endured something no child should have to endure or watch his mom suffer through. I wake up every morning and think about how I almost died in the middle of the night after going to bed feeling safe and sound, back when I was happy. Every day I'm grateful just to wake up without a gun in my face. I think of my son and whether he is safe, and then I ask myself, why? Why must my mind do this every single morning? The man that raped me threatened over and over again to murder my 3-year-old little boy if I told anyone what he did. So much so that I didn't tell the police. It was 5 long, painful hours of him threatening me not to, in return for my son's life. It was my mom who met me at the grocery store that morning after we escaped the house. She called the police, thank God. My mom has endured the toll of being a secondary victim. If I hadn't have cooperated like I did that night, if I had put up a fight, I would instead probably be a missing person or a murdered person, and my innocent little boy would be the same. When he gets out of jail, he will find me and he'll kill me. Not a single person has denied that statement. Even though he's now living behind bars, I live in fear. Why me? Why did he target me? How did he find out where I lived? This was obviously premeditated. He had called my ex-husband a few months before and asked, "So you and Dano are officially done now, right?" Was that him getting permission? What did I do to deserve this? He video recorded himself raping me. How many times did he watch that video? How many times did other people watch that video? Was it sold online? How many times were the most private parts of my body exploited on the worst morning of my life? I can hardly describe how this has affected my family and me. For 2 years, I have been silenced. I had a falling out with my parents. I had a falling out with my sister. I pushed my boyfriend away. I pushed my ex-husband away. I cried myself to sleep and wake up with nightmares that haunt me the rest of the day. But I bottle it up and hide behind my usual smile. I take my rage out on people who do not deserve it. And for that, my friends and family. I am so, so sorry. Because I am so broken, I keep people at a distance. Sometimes I cannot control my anger and pain, and it scares me. Hurt people hurt people. Who have I become? I'm no longer who I was, nor will I ever be that person again. But I must take this and try to make good use of its energy. So, I'm part of the Survivor Advisory Group to the Governor of Minnesota. This is my second of two terms. I attended a sexual assault support group in Olmsted County. And before COVID-19, I extended the support group on an informal level to be sure my fellow warriors would never feel alone. I am an activist and an advocate, and I always will be. I know what he did. It is fixed in my memory. I know my story. I know my experience. I told my story, and it was proven true by the videos that he took. It takes 4 pounds of pressure to pull the trigger on a 9mm handgun. I think about this every day. 4 measly pounds of pressure could have ended my life when that gun was repeatedly pointed at my head. 4 pounds of pressure, and I wouldn't be here today. 4 pounds of pressure, and I wouldn't have been there to watch my son go to his first day of kindergarten or see him lose his first tooth. I wouldn't feel the warmth of his little head on my chest as he listens to my heartbeat, and he wouldn't have me to lay my head on his. Doing this is our proof to each other that we survived and we're still alive. It was extremely tough for me to sit down and finalize this statement. I've avoided it until the last minute because this statement will never be final. I'll never fully heal, never get over this, never forget. Today, as I near the end of this statement, know that this is not the end. This is not where my broken soul heals. It is the start of a new chapter in my mission to advocate for other survivors who have endured rape and sexual violence. So here we are. He wears a mask. And I'm shaking, just like the last time he saw me. But today I am shaking for new reasons, with a new energy. As Dr. Maya Angelou says, you may kill me with your hatefulness, but still, like air, I'll rise. I can be changed by what happens to me, but I refuse to be reduced by it. Your Honor, his sentence is my sentence too. His sentence is my son's sentence. While we're already in hiding as much as we can be, I don't know what we're going to do when he's out. It's been a countdown to get to being here today, but it only starts a new countdown until he's released from prison. 994 out of 1,000 rapists walk free. Please don't let him be one of them. Thank you. He was sentenced to almost 21 years in prison, and in Minnesota, he'll serve about 2/3 of that with good time served. Essentially, he's looking at parole in 2033. Which is the year that my son graduates from high school. I can protect my son while this man is in prison. I can't protect him from if this man hires somebody within prison or outside of prison to come find us. I know one of your other guests had that concern, or you did, Amy. I have that same concern every single day. Thankfully, I have people within the prison system in Minnesota that are keeping an eye on him for me, but still, I do have that same concern. When he looks to get out on parole, he'll either get parole, otherwise he'll be institutionalized for being a sexual predator, which I don't really know what that means long term for him. All I know is I don't know if I'll be out of the country or if, I don't know where I'll be. His prison sentence is definitely a countdown for my son and now my daughter too. Now I have 2 little lion cubs to protect. I have this giant lioness tattoo on my shoulder because that's how I view myself as a lioness. I will do anything to protect my lion cubs. And I think I proved that on November 17th of 2018, and I still will to this day.
I was going to ask you if you got any tattoos in this journey.
Yeah, I have a few now. Lady Gaga and some sexual assault survivors made a Fire Rose Unity tattoo. I have that on my forearm. I have a lioness on my shoulder. I have my son's birth date on my forearm. I'm going to get my daughter's birth date on my forearm. And then I do have a few other ones, but those ones are my most recent. Some of the other ways that I healed was trying to take back any power that I could. I got a German Shepherd. I had a permit to carry. Nobody could find me. I was in hiding. I kept my mattress and I took it to my friend's house, dumped gasoline on it, and I torched it. That felt amazing. That was really good closure for me. I got a motorcycle. I still to this day ride, and I love riding. It's my wind therapy. I did kickboxing, running, listen to podcasts like yours. I lost so much after being raped. I lost who I was. I lost a promotion. I lost my parents for an amount of time. I lost my house. My 3-year-old son lost his 2 best friends that we were living next to. Our world was just completely turned upside down. So any little amount of control that I could take back, I did. I took my son to therapy first. And while my son was at therapy, just a couple months after I was raped, the therapist said, well, what about you? Do you have a therapist? I said, well, we're here for my son, not for me. She's like, okay. So she left the room. She got somebody else. I met with a therapist for the first time right then and there during my son's appointment, which I am so appreciative of because I'm not sure I would have taken the time otherwise. I got set up with a really great therapist that was trauma-informed, which is super hard to come by. What worked best for me was EMDR, eye movement, desensitization, reprocessing. The second best was writing. I have a memoir called 4 Pounds of Pressure because that's what I survived that day. I survived a lot of things, but I survived a gun pointed at my head multiple times. Throughout my 2+ year court process healing journey, I would journal everything that happened, whether it was falling out for my parents or a court hearing. At the end of it, at sentencing, I took all of my journal entries, I put them together, and that's how I came up with my memoir. I can't say it was easy. It's my sweat and blood all in one book.
Thank you to Surfshark for sponsoring this episode. Safety is an issue we talk about quite often on this show, and that is why I am very excited to share with you about Surfshark. Surfshark offers a VPN, or virtual private network, which keeps you safe and private online. When the internet is accessed through your device's virtual private network, all the information about your visits are encrypted, or blurred out, in a way. That keeps your online presence, as well as where you're physically accessing the internet, undetected. In other words, using a VPN is like wearing pants. When you go outside, all the important stuff stays private and secure. A VPN also lets you virtually travel the world with a tap of a finger, i.e., change your IP address. For example, if you live in Spain, you can connect to a Canadian server and access the biggest movie catalog on Netflix. The same goes for other countries and some streaming services, too. Plus, Surfshark does not limit the number of devices you can connect to your VPN, and they offer 24/7 support. To top it off, Surfshark even offers other products like comprehensive antivirus services. Secure your privacy with Surfshark. Get Surfshark VPN at surfshark.deals/WCN and enter the promo code WCN for 3 extra months for free. You heard me right. 3 extra months for free. That's surfshark.deals/WCN.
My memoir is dedicated to my son. It says, all the strength, courage, and bravery I possess comes from simply being your mother. My epilogue goes as follows. April 10th, 2021, 2:58 a.m. I hear the metal sound of a doorknob clumsily jingling. After a moment, there is a click and the door opens. A familiar sound. The bed squeaks quietly as my German Shepherd sits up, suddenly on high alert. I hear shuffling of little feet across a small stretch of carpet, and then a small stretch of wood flooring in the hallway, and again on the carpet in my bedroom. By this point, I am on high alert as well, waiting for my little man to moan and groan and pull his way up onto my bed. His little hands grab my new gray blanket and he hoists himself up. He crawls up to the pillow right next to mine. I welcome him by pulling down my blankets and sheets, making a special spot for him to snuggle. Once he has settled himself, I cover him up, hug him tight, kiss him on the cheek, and lay back down after gently listening to his heartbeat. Thump, 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 thump. My dearest son, I know one day you will come across this book. One day you will realize what happened to Mommy the morning a man was fixing our shower. There are parts of me that will be forever broken. But know that you are the reason I'm still here. You are the reason I was strong enough to keep us alive. You are the reason my heart still beats. You are my everything. You may be grown up, heading to college, or having children of your own by the time you come across this book. But darling boy, I needed to protect you that morning, as I had every moment prior to that and every moment since. This public book is one thing I cannot protect you from. I can no longer hide what happened, but I hope in reading these words, you know we moved on with our lives and we overcame the terror of that morning. I always wanted what was best for you, as I still do while you are reading these words. If you ever feel not good enough, not strong enough, not courageous enough, let me know, and I will tell you how much love I have for you and how proud I am of the man you've grown up to be. In every moment that passed when you were a child, I somehow grew to love you even more than the moment before. Lion cub, I've taught you consent. I've taught you to respect all humans. I've taught you to not objectify people the best that I could. I've taught you to watch your friends, notice if they're not treating a woman right, notice if they need to be called out on something. Teach my future grandchildren the same, and together we can make the world a safer place, one human at a time. Despite how small that seems, it means the world to an unknowing victim who doesn't have to become a victim. There's no way to adequately write the words to explain my love for you. There's nothing I could write that could ever be enough. Instead, I will spend the rest of my life fighting for you, protecting you, and loving you. You are the reason my sun shines, my heart beats, and my lungs breathe. I would do anything for you still. I will always do everything in my power to keep you safe. There's no love in the world more than a mom's love for her child. I have all the fight in the world inside of me to keep you safe, and I'm ready, as always. I am a lioness. I am mom. All my love, forever and ever, mom. He always wondered why we couldn't go back home. My mom and I finally told him the man that was fixing our shower was actually a man that wasn't supposed to be there. He was a bad guy. Over the 5 years, my son hasn't asked too much about it. He just knows that the man whose voice he heard, he's a bad guy. He doesn't know that anything bad happened to me. He doesn't know anything other than we had to move because of that man. And my son's doing just fine now, but the summer he asked, "Hey, mommy, do you remember that man that was in our old house in St. Charles? Does he live there now?" So I told him, "No, he's actually in prison now." My sister is a correctional officer at a women's prison, but I told my son that Auntie and her friends are keeping him in prison because he shouldn't have been in our house. I don't plan to tell him anything until he figures it out himself somehow, and then I'll be there to talk him through it. I ended up having more to say, so I wrote a sequel, which is called Another 4 Pounds of Pressure. My second book has the transcript from the sentencing hearing, so it has what the rapist said at sentencing and how he felt about my victim impact statement. Then it has some updates about what I'm doing. And in that book, I interviewed secondary survivors. So I interviewed my mom, my sister, my ex-husband, my boyfriend. I was dating a man at the time that I was raped. We had just started dating. Because I was raped, I deleted all social media, so we lost touch. And now actually I'm dating that man again. After I searched his criminal record, because I learned how to do that, he came to one of my book signings a few years later, and then we started dating again. Now we have a 1-year-old daughter together. I also have 2 children's books, a thriller that I wrote, and then a book that I have coming up. I interviewed 12 sexual assault survivors, and each chapter is their story. And along with each chapter, I got 2 victim advocates from my county, and they take one element of each story and talk about it in a professional sense. It's almost like a resource guide for not only other survivors, but also just the community in general. Whether it's a friend of a survivor or family of survivors. A friend told me that it's a really heavy read. He said that he could only read 2 chapters a night. And I was thinking about that. He can only read 2 chapters a night. But when you go to Target, that's 1 in every 4 people that have stories like this. You just don't know about it. They're hiding it. Survivors are walking amongst us. You just don't know who they are. So it's just something interesting for me to think about. My book should be coming out later this summer, so that'll be book number 6 for me.
Absolutely amazing. to be able to do all of this at the same time as healing, what was the hardest thing about that? And what was the most healing thing about your whole writing journey?
The hardest thing is I know all the 12 sexual assault survivors, somebody that I used to work with, knowing that they had a story. It's so hard hearing that and knowing what to say. I essentially just listen to them, believe them, and support them in any way that I can. I speak a lot with law enforcement and to lawyers, social workers, sexual assault nurse examiners. It's hard when I give speeches and people come up to me afterwards and say, here's my story. I love having those conversations, but it's so hard knowing that everyone else is going through this and it's so heartbreaking. And I wish that we could just get down to the root cause and stop all this from happening in the first place. I just wish nobody had to go through any of this trauma. This quote I saw this morning says, reporting an abuser doesn't ruin their lives. They did that themselves. Reporting an abuser doesn't ruin their reputation. It makes it more accurate. Reporting an abuser isn't selfish. It's a radical act of bravery that takes tremendous courage. So if I was to suggest something to other victims, first and foremost, get the medical help. Go to the ER. Get the rape kit. Go to therapy. Get a victim's advocate because they can help you make an informed decision on if you want to report your rape or not. You can still get the medical help even if you don't report it to law enforcement. I would also recommend networking, so support groups, listening to podcasts like this one. I recommend having a one-liner, so if people ask you what happened or are you okay, having something that you want to say if you don't want to talk about it. I also want to say don't take responsibility for the abuser. They did what they did because of choices that they made. It is not your fault and you don't need to take responsibility for it. If someone's telling you you have to report it so he doesn't do it to somebody else, that's not your responsibility. That's not a decision that you have to make. Do what is best for you. My suggestion is, even if you don't find a silver lining, it's okay to not be okay. But I still suggest to take back your voice, take back your power, take back your control, and take back your life. My goal for sharing is there's so many horror stories about people not being believed, about people being retaliated against. And while all those experiences of not being believed are true, I want to be that one experience of hope that maybe inspires other people to report because I was believed. I have a nonprofit organization called WISH, and that stands for We Inspire Survivor Healing. I was supported so much in my community that it's my way of giving back to my community, but also to make sure to recognize secondary victims. We collected items to donate to Mayo Clinic's emergency room to be given to victims of sexual violence after their rape kits are done or during their rape kit. That's what we worked on most recently. My website is www.danielleleukam.com, and Leukam is L-E-U-K-A-M. My Facebook is Danielle Louise Leukam. Instagram is Danielle Leukam. X is Danielle_Leukam. So if you look forward to reading my upcoming book, subscribe to my website. I post updates as to when the release date is going to be and whatnot.
I'm so sorry for everything that you've been through. You are such a bright light. You are such a compassionate, empathetic, amazing human, and that shines so much through every way that you heal and every way that you give back. Thank you for everything that you do.
Thank you. I appreciate you reaching out to me, and I'm so honored to be here. I've been listening to your podcast for so long. This feels like such an honor.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
I was angry because I knew what my uncle was capable of. These things need to be brought to light because, as I've seen so many times over, it's always the person you least expect. This is one of those situations you wouldn't even think it was possible, but these things happen. And I am so empowered right now to speak up about things that I try and bury so deep.
Thank you again to Babbel and Surfshark for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget, you can get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for listeners at babbel.com/WCN. Again, that's 55% off at babbel.com/WCN, spelled BABBEL.com/WCN. Rules and restrictions may apply. Also, remember, secure your privacy with Surfshark. Get Surfshark VPN at surfshark.deals/WCN and enter the promo code WCN for 3 extra months for free. Yes, 3 extra months for free at surfshark.deals/WCN. What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.